Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 288.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Before leaving for combat in Afghanistan, my next guest, Navy SEAL Tom Shea, promised his wife that he would write to his children in case he didn't make it back. What was initially intended to be a private memoir for his family turned into a powerful book called Unbreakable. It's a powerful set of lessons for anyone striving to perform beyond what they believe. Tom served 23 years with distinguished valor as a Navy SEAL. And during his military career, he served in three wars, ultimately leading a team of Navy SEALs into Afghanistan in 2009, where he earned a Silver Star, a Bronze Star with Valor, Army Commendation with Valor, and a Second Combat Action Medal. He's also the CEO of Adamtine Alliance, a leadership and human performance coaching organization, and it was an honor to have Tom Shea on my show. You're really going to enjoy this conversation. We talk about his book, Unbreakable. We talk about leadership and life in general, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Hey, check out doseofleadership.com. Visit my website if you want to see all the interviews on Dose of Leadership. You can also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher and download it to your mobile device. Also, check out richardryerson.com to learn more about my speaking, coaching, and masterminding services. And without further ado, here is Tom Shea, former Navy SEAL, on Dose of Leadership. Well, Tom, so excited to have you on the show. Welcome to Dose of Leadership, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
I love having Navy SEALs. You know, when I was in the Marine Corps, flew KC-130s and did a lot of halo drops with guys, with you guys in Kuwait, but this was in the kind of the late 90s, but I always enjoyed working with you guys. So how much interaction did you have with the Corps?
Oh, well, that's a great question. You don't go into combat without having Marine Corps somewhere.
Yeah.
Either fighting next to them in, you know, Ramadi or Habaniya or in Kandahar. I can't remember a time, even in Kosovo, that there hasn't been Marine massive involvement in my life. So
yeah,
here we are again.
Here we are again. No, and I, like I said, I have the utmost respect for all the SEALs I work with. Every guy I work with has just been a great guy to work with and a great guy to play with. I mean, they definitely worked hard and play hard and had a few beers with quite a few in my time in the Corps, and it was just great conversations and great camaraderie of all. So I always appreciate what you guys did. When did you get out?
I retired 3 years ago, January. So, you know, three plus years ago.
And how long were you in? 26 years? Is that right?
No, I was in 23 years. 23 long.
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
It feels like 100 years. Yeah. Yeah, it was 23.
Your body must be sore. I don't know. I can't imagine.
No, I lucked. I you know, that's the only thing I think was luck in my career is I never got a major injury, never got blown up or shot. My wife would debate if I have brain trauma or not, but – I don't have any big ailments other than age.
When you started, what was the goal? Was always to be a SEAL, or was it to join the Navy, join the military? How did the dream of a SEAL come into play?
Ooh, I have to go back that far. Yeah. Huh? So yeah. I grew up with guys that were precursors to SEALs that were in the World War II vintage. Friends of my dad. And so I always saw that, you know, if that old guy could have done that lifestyle, that was always the first inspiration to me. And hanging out with them when I was young was the real beginning. But I played football and track in high school and graduated from a little town in Brookville, Indiana, and went straight to West Point. So the story starts there. And it ends there, actually. I ended up failing out after my third year.
Wow.
And which I think is the funniest conversation about performance and leadership is where you start from failure.
Yes.
And so, you know, try not to make it too long. I went home with my tail tucked between my legs. And that same guy who I grew up with asked me a simple question. Now that you failed, what do you have to lose?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, and he said, what would you like to do that you're willing to commit your life to now? And I said, hey, Pat, I always wanted to be a SEAL. And he goes, do it. And so, I went back to college, and in that year and a half of trying to figure out if I wanted to do the corporate route or another route, those long enduring conversations with Pat Tomlinson led me to walking into the recruiter's office, and there just happened to be a Navy SEAL recruiter there.
Wow.
And he signed me up, and I signed it up, and I couldn't swim. I never swam before.
You're kidding me.
No. Oh, and so then I learned how to swim by, you jump into a pool and have a girl train you. And that's been the story of my life.
That's amazing. It's always so fun to hear how those little, missteps or getting faced with some sort of adversity, or at the time probably looks like a crushing defeat, actually ends up being quite a blessing in disguise in some roundabout way. A lot of it's due by your initiative and choice, obviously. And I think that's important to understand. Did you realize that, at the time is like, I have a lot of control over this, or it's just like, I got to do something. What was it? Was it pride, shame, motivation? What drove you to go down that path?
Down the SEAL path? It's just, in talking to people who have been successful, and now I know it to be true. At the time, I didn't know it to be true, but I'll just say it this way. What has become true, I had the opportunity of learning early in life, and here's the truth. Out of adversity comes greatness.
Yeah.
And yeah, what made me choose that then is asking people who are successful, how do you pursue a successful life when you've just hit rock bottom? And they all laugh. They're like, hey, you now it's time to start. Right. Until you hit rock bottom, then you're just coasting in life. And so they said, hey, go big.
Yeah.
Go attack something that you cannot figure out, but it wakes you up in the morning. Yeah. And that led me to SEALs. And then I went into the Navy, enlisted, having a degree, because I for some reason it was easier for me to think about going in enlisted, because the job opportunities within the SEAL program were more better for enlisted. So I go to SEAL training through their route of corpsman. So I became a Navy corpsman, ended up at SEAL training, start my first class, make it to Hell Week, and got a concussion.
Oh my gosh.
Then since I already know how to come back from adversity, as long as you don't quit in the SEAL community and you can perform at the same time, as long as you don't quit, they're not going to kick you out.
Right.
And so they said, hey, would you like to start over? Part of the devil on my shoulder said yes. And the angel said, dude, don't. Yeah, you might not want to do this again. And I chose the devil side. So,
yeah.
And so I started my second class, got to Hell Week again, and dislocated my shoulder.
Oh my God, dude.
And then I was like, again, same thing. Well, they said, Shay, are you going to quit or are you going to get rolled again? And I said, I'd love to start on Monday, but I can't lift my arm. So I missed a class and they started me up again at the beginning, made it to Hell Week, got pneumonia. What? And I won't make the story longer than this. So I got pneumonia again and they said, you can start over. So I started over with pneumonia. And if anybody listening to this has ever had pneumonia, you know that you can't do anything.
That is, it knocks you down.
And so I made it another 5 weeks into Hell Week again, woke up in the hospital with all five lobes, about 50% infiltrated with fluid.
Oh my God.
And they kicked me out.
Oh my God.
So I came back 6 months later. Or 9 months later, and made it through unscathed in my fifth attempt.
Holy cow.
That's the start of my life.
Holy cow. That is incredible. I mean, I thought I knew what the definition of tenacity was, but that's the most tenacious story I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, it didn't feel tenacious.
Yeah, but it is the definition of it, though, my friend. Good Lord.
Tenacious to me, I think I have my definition is start over.
Well, that's
and what, take what you got and move as best you can with what you got. And that boy, that definition carried true in combat. And so I was used to being that level of start over, tenacious. And then when I finally got into combat, combat was welcome.
Yeah.
It was easier to deal in combat than it was in regular life.
Yeah. When you graduated, were they just like blown away that how, you know, I mean, did they all know? They obviously knew your story, right? I mean, how long it took you to get to the final graduation?
It's hard to blow a SEAL away.
Yeah, that's
true. My story is probably on the list of, you know, 1 to 1,000, the top story. I'm probably at 90.
Yeah.
I have a good story, but there's guys that, I know a guy that got shot 28 times or 27 times and survived.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah. And you don't get pats on the back in that community ever.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. Mm-hmm. And listening to you and in that combination of leadership that I talk about on the show, and that I think that we all should be striving for, is that intensity of will coupled with this tremendous sense of humility, which defines the SEALs in a nutshell. And in that type of leadership is warrior-like. It is sacrificial. I mean, to me, it's the ultimate in love, actually. Some people are uncomfortable with it in the civilian corporate community, but I think that's how life should be lived, because you can't avoid adversity. You can't avoid chaos. You can't avoid tragedy. You can't avoid, no matter how hard you try, you're going to get knocked on your ass at some point. And those moments of greatness, to your point, are measured by how you get up.
Yeah, and you hear about that, and I'm kind of glad that you took it that direction. Is you can download adverse stories, and so the big question is, boy, I get that. That's encouraging, and then you're in that moment of that transition. What happens in that moment, I think very few people understand, is adversity and chaos are twins. They're probably the same. They're not twins.
Yeah.
In adversity, nothing is clear. You don't get a clear step. It's not clear, boy, if I start again, then it will always work out.
Right.
It's not clear, hey, you know, if I just get up, it is gray. And worse than that, it's discouraging.
Right.
Because the people, not the SEALs next to you, not your guys going through the same adverse condition, they're always encouraging because they're just struggling in the moment. The outside world is totally discouraging to everything that is adverse. And even your parents.
Right.
Your girlfriend,
yeah,
your
the
wife,
closest ones, you're right.
If you're a woman, your boyfriend. They don't want you to feel the pain and they don't want you to experience loss. So they inadvertently are discouraging. Meanwhile, the SEAL instructor goes, oh, it's bleeding. Okay. Get up. It hurts. Cool. Get up. They may yell at you and cuss a little bit, but that community knows the only thing that you can do as a teammate is encourage the other guy to honor their word. So you promised to be here. I'm sorry that your leg is broke. You still are here. So either quit or stay. And that aspect of adversity is what people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Is getting up. Oh yeah, I can get up. Like the last Super Bowl. In the last second, it was won.
Yeah.
Because they got back up. Did they know they were going to win?
No.
You can ask them later. But in the moment, they're like, shit, this is going south.
Yeah.
Either we get back in the game or we just coast through this and make our $1 million.
Right.
But let's play as best we can right now. Something will open up. And it's gray. That's what is so crazy that people, I try to encourage the people around me and my clients. It's simple.
to think about. Very difficult when you're experiencing it.
Yeah, because we want. Yeah, it's such a great point. It's a subtle, very powerful point, because when you're in the middle of it, again, nothing, just because you get up, still nothing's guaranteed. You may still not finish. You may not make it to the end. You may go even deeper into the hole that you even thought was possible, right?
Yes. And it's usually deeper.
Yeah, right. I mean,
yeah.
We tend to think, oh, this is it. This is my splat moment. You know, I'm just going to get motivated and say yes and move. Well, the reality is that may not. That's the grayness you're talking about. Nothing is guaranteed. Nothing is certain. And that's, that really is the definition of courage, right? I mean, you just don't know. And what are your choices? I'm going to keep going until I don't have breath in me. And again, here we are at zero speed talking about all these great theoretical concepts. And, you know, and I get a bad review in my show and I'm crushed for the day. And how pansy, you know, and how pansy is that, right? And like, oh, I just want to quit, you know. But I think that's why it's important to have that, those. I love that you talked about that. I'm even struggling trying to, I know exactly what you're saying, because it's just that you still have to go forward, even though you may not be successful. What choice do you have? I call it kind of like the in the mud moment, right? You got it. You're going to be in it, and you may go deeper in the mud. But when it's all said and done and you finally do get out of it, and I think it's important to know, I think that's what I was trying to say. It's important to know, in that grayness, in that mud moment, you actually do have a choice. No matter
always,
no matter what's going on, as long as you have breath in your body, you still have a choice. And that's very powerful. I think if you, in that gray moment, if you can remember that, I think you got more of a fighting chance.
Well, you know, so I'll add something to that, simply because I've been asked to try to take deep dives with clients and, you know, try to make a point in a 1 hour keynote that has a great takeaway. And so having to dive into that for the past 3 years, here's what I know to be true. And for some reason, very few people know it at this level. And I don't know if I created it or came up with it. I just know this to be true. The only thing humans have that everybody is born with is the ability to keep their word or not keep their word.
Yeah.
So in those moments of adversity, you made a promise. Keep it. You can choose not to. You may be able to go back and relive that moment later when you're fresh and the sun is shining, or you won't. But in that moment, if you do your best to keep your word, you have an opportunity that few have.
Yeah.
That to me is what I learned as a leader. My promise to the men, and I don't know if anybody's ever heard the real promise that leaders make to men. It's not about hitting the target.
Yeah.
It's not about being successful in combat. The only promise you make to the men is, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get you home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will do whatever it takes. If I have to bend over backwards, if I have to walk on broken glass myself, that's what I do. And that's still, whether it's the right promise or not, whatever promise you make to somebody, keep it.
Yeah. You know, there's so much in that. It's such a simple concept to understand, but there's so much to that on keeping your word no matter what, because that is where you're going to be probably tested the most in your life. You know what I mean? I mean, in combat or not combat, right? You're going to be, I said I was going to do this. It looks bleak. And the easy way out is, well, I'm going to go back on it or not do what I said I was going to do. Right?
Yeah.
And if you,
the battle is always internal.
Exactly.
Always. And everybody, that's, I think, gets lost in history. And in the writing of books, I wish I could have made a better point in my book, but I don't think I did the greatest job of writing what I wanted my kids to learn. But the element of real great success that is actually learnable is keep your word.
Yeah.
So I've put now 28 people through this one-on-one intensive training that I've been asked to produce for executives and athletes and whoever else is brave enough to do it.
Right.
And so I do a one homework assignment in the beginning because I want to see how this person that I'm training can honor their word. It's a simple homework. And out of the 20 plus people that have gone through it one-on-one and the 150 that have tried it, I ask you a question. So let me tell you what the homework is.
Okay.
Do 5 push-ups, 5 sit-ups, and 5 squats right before you go to bed and right after you wake up, and do it for 7 days straight. So 150 people have tried it. How many of the 150 have done it exactly that way?
It's going to be an extremely low number. I'm just...
Very low.
Yeah. 10%.
So 11 people now.
11.
11. It's not that they're dishonest.
Right.
It's because what the exploration is all inside. It's 1,000 ways to quit in life. The moment you make a commitment, there's subtle, seductive, believable language that comes up that will talk you out of it.
Yeah. I mean, that.
And Pat, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that is why life is so hard. I mean, it really is the root of why everything in life is so, or we make it so difficult.
We do, yes. And then so what happens with, once you learn that experience, you start writing down every reason there is to quit in life. Good. So those are your reasons. Just don't use them again.
Right.
You have to go back to whatever. Now after you learn that, then what are you willing to make an agreement on and make it big? If you know what's going to stop you, and it ain't the environment, the weather doesn't stop you, because SEALs learned that the weather and the environment is just a data point.
Right.
They make an agreement to do something. It probably is not going to be pretty. And if there's a wall in the way, that's just it's a wall. Either I go through it or around it.
Right.
And okay, my leg hurts. I'm tired. Your worst case, my buddy's shot and we're dragging him. We're still going to get it done. Because we've, in the SEAL community and in Hell Week, and now what I'm taking into the business community, is take that level of attention to honoring your word and to everything you do. And you'll get it done.
Yeah.
Who cares if it takes 10 years?
You know, the simplicity of it is what's so attractive to it. And I think a lot of times I'm curious how many people, when they hear that, they think, oh, it's got to be more than that. But the reality is there's a lot of work and intentionality behind that, that I don't think a lot of people fully appreciate. And your example of doing the exercises in the morning and the night is sums it up. Right. I mean, it's very,
yeah, there is a lot of work to it. And I don't want to detract from the viability of relentless training, yes, and practice. That's really what success is.
Yep.
It's relentless. You hit, you get knocked down, get back up, learn, adjust, mm-hmm, adapt, and all that military jargon of adapt and overcome and all, mm-hmm, that. That's really where success comes from. Great leadership comes from that.
Yep.
But what great leaders know is when something comes out of their mouth, that's them.
Right.
And then when their team, even guys above leaders, so you're not always the top leader. And what you also demand in other people is when they say A, that's them. They make A happen.
Right.
And that's the greatest thing you can ever learn from any situation is I made a promise and I kept it.
Yeah.
And then all that gap in between was life.
I love that.
You know?
Yeah. I love it. And I know at the root of that is a style of leadership that really, it's almost like you can replace the word leadership with the word love. I say that in presentations that the Marine Corps is the most loving organization that I've ever worked in. I can imagine the SEALs was the ultimate in what you consider love. And when I talk about love in that sense, I get a lot of strange looks. And I think it's because people the way I talk about love and leadership, it's synonymous. But when I talk about it, I think people are thinking of the Valentine's Day emotion, which is crap, right? The love I'm talking about is pretty grimy, gritty, sacrificial. It has little, if any, much to do with what I'm feeling at the moment. Does that make sense? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, I don't shy away from the word love and the application of it. And I 100% agree that if you get a friendship with a Marine and they let you in, so they don't let everybody in, not to the Marine Corps, but into their circle of friends. If you're inside of that, that is the distinction called love in every aspect.
Yeah.
And what that actually is that you also count. That the other person also counts. And if you're down, there's an empathetic feeling that goes on. Mm-hmm. And that's one distinction that love is. And, you know, I think a little deeper than that in the SEAL community, as a leader in the SEAL community, if you don't have that emotion available where that other person counts more than me, you're going to be asked to leave.
Yeah.
Because the other person's performance is what leaders are measured against, not my own.
Right.
And the blame's always on me, but it's on their performance. If the platoon fails, it's not their fault. It's the leader's fault.
Exactly.
And so in the business community, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And you know, at home, if you have that deep sense where your family counts more than you, the family thrives.
Yep.
Every time. There's no point in time where the family won't thrive, because they'll get through adverse conditions because you give them all your attention. And yeah, so that's how I look at it. I don't know, maybe different than how you framed it up.
No, that's exactly how I see it. And I guess my follow-on question is, how do you, and some of the resistance I've had from the real world, the corporate world, I guess, is how do you replicate that culture into, you know, L&J's accounting firm? Because they'll look at and they'll hear your cool Navy stories and your combat stories. And hey, and of course, it's at the extreme. Of course you get that. I'm doing this. And we all have heard that before. Like, you know, people don't join these warrior class organizations because for God and country, they do it for the guy next to them, right? And when that's all the successful battles are won because they were, to your point, cared more about the guy next to them than themselves, right?
Every time.
Every time. But how do you replicate that type of extreme culture? And I say it can be done, but I've had resistance, be like, oh, well, that's combat. That's this, or that's, you know, you're doing extreme things. You know, I'm an accounting firm or I'm a dry cleaning company. How do you replicate that culture?
Well, it's simple. So flying, I'm not a flyer. I'm not a pilot. From my point of view of flying, it's complicated. Is it complicated?
It's simple. Really?
It's simple. Yeah. So, yeah, and that culture is simple, and it's based on two premises, just two. Honor your word and don't quit.
Yeah. I love it.
If you do those two things, the next thing that comes out is you and I get to honor our word together, and we're not going to quit together. And if we do something together, like if we have the same goal, the experience that you and I have in each other is love.
Yep.
The problem in corporate culture is everything is so siloed that nobody feels like they get impacted or impact somebody else, which is a travesty.
Yeah.
Because the receptionist is impactful to the business.
Yep.
The boss obviously is impactful. I think when the boss gets it, the whole company gets it.
Yeah.
And that, so that's what my attack plan is attack leadership so that they get balance in their life coming out of those two premises of success.
I mean, it's so simple, but to understand, that's what I love about it, because you can easily wrap your arms around that of keeping your word and never quitting. And to your point is, if we do that together, we experience that together, particularly if it's an adverse situation, which you will face at some point, and you come out on the other side together, then that's where that culture starts to get cemented. It becomes like breathing, the loyalty is bred, the lifetime. Yeah, I mean, that's how it's replicated.
Well, and in corporate environment, I think there's a fear of failure that doesn't exist in the warrior community. In the warrior community, and I'm the assumption is that it happens in the Marine Corps, and I went through Marine Sniper School, so I can't call myself a Marine, but in the SEAL community, the only environment that you exist in is failure.
Right.
Everything goes to failure. Every time you go out and train, you train to failure to see what's broken, what needs to be fixed, how you can crush the next level. In the corporate environment, they are afraid to fail.
Right.
They don't want to know what the problems are.
Mm-hmm.
And they definitely don't want to know if they have a problem. And in the SEAL community, if you have a problem, your buddy's going to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And you better correct it by tomorrow. And, oh, it's all good then, you know. But everybody knows that's coming up all the time. And so they, in the real warrior culture, it's the embrace of failure that exists that creates, there's no plateau. There's only an up curve.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's possible. Let's go see where we are and push it.
Yep.
And I took on running ultra marathons because I'd had several back fractures from some helo crashes. And the doc said, your running days are over. So I immediately signed up for an ultra marathon because I didn't want to live in the condition called I can't.
Yes.
And it was hard, and it still is hard. And I've done 10 big, you know, a couple hundreds and several 50s since then, just to keep learning about myself. And so that not relevant to leadership, but in the corporate culture, there's no conversation called let's break it.
Right.
Because it costs money and time and energy, and there's going to be a vector down and we're going to be in the red and the investors are going to be scared. And oh my gosh, we're not going to make 10%. Okay. Well, how about 200%?
Yeah.
I'm interested in 200, and you can't get past 10% unless you break things.
Yeah, exactly. I think in all of that breeds this kind of sweeping things under the rug of building those silos. You don't get those honest, frank conversations, you know, because people are afraid to speak up. I mean, in the flying community, it's the embrace. We talked about embrace your mistakes. There's no such thing. I mean, we make them all the time. They just can't be, they just can't be fatal. And, you know, I can't run into a mountain. I can't run out of gas. I can't land with my gear up.
Yeah.
You know, those are the things that we ultimately avoid. And that's why you have, and I think that's where corporate America goons it up too, is where they look at planning the wrong way. And from an aviation standpoint, I look at planning as my measure of success isn't hitting every single waypoint that I have on a flight plan. Of the thousands that I've flown, I could give a rat's behind about each of the waypoints and did I hit it exactly on time and how much gas. I mean, I know that I have it there just to, so it can tell me if something's drastically wrong and then I can adjust. But all I care about is the outcome of getting all those warm pink and brown bodies to the destination, warm pink and brown. That's all I care about. And it's gravy if it's early or on time and I got extra gas.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in corporate America, the focus is on the waypoints. Does that make sense? Instead of the outcome.
Yes. And you said something earlier that I want to step back to is, what happens in highly successful institutions, companies, teams, is the teams that are really chronically successful, they plan and train in a benign environment for failures. So I'm sure that you plan for a gear up landing.
Yeah, everything we do is for failure. Every training event is towards some sort of failure.
Yeah. And so, and when it doesn't happen, you're like, "Whoo, thank God we got
right,
home."
So, right.
But, and I don't notice, and I may be wrong, and I've worked with, you know, 15 companies since I've gotten out, that hesitation to see what the problems are. And if you do have a problem, go train it until it's gone. And that there's a real hesitancy to do that. And coming from the 23 years in the SEAL community, everything was, okay, what would happen if? Well, let's go experience it in a safe setting, not when people are shooting at you.
Right.
Because I guarantee, so I have a fun metric. I always like to measure things. And my wife told me that I'd spent 2,700 hours in active combat in my career.
Wow.
And so what happens in combat is everything that you didn't plan for, or you could have not planned for because you were scared, comes up.
Right.
And so SEALs learned that long ago, prior to World War II, that just plan for everything to go bad. So let's have a go bad training today.
Right.
What happens if you don't have water? Okay. Let's go feel it. What happens if you run out of rounds? You're still in the game. Find another solution. And so, but by the time you're in combat, you've done all these bad things so many times. When it happens, you just, oh, okay, we know what to do now. And there's no panic. And so, you know, like where the stock market goes down 2 points, people are in a panic.
Right.
If it goes up, everybody's elated. But they didn't drive either of those, but they're reactive. And great leaders and great organizations don't respond to things they don't control.
Right.
And so they find ways to control everything, the good, the bad, the people. And my opinion now is that everything is centered on people. Products be damned. The plane doesn't fly itself. The gun doesn't shoot itself.
Yep.
The people are the key to everything in a company. And that's a great revelation to have as a leader, is that people can do extraordinary things if you let them.
Yeah, that's the key. You know, it seemed like from a leadership perspective in a corporate, I always think if you really wanted to shake it up in an organization, it's almost like, particularly if you're gun shy and saying, well, we can't do it, it costs too much money. It'd be great if you could just peel off 20% of your organization and let them just go completely rogue. You know what I mean? And and go figure things out and don't even expect a positive ROI.
Yep.
And if you did that, I think that, and then let the other 80% cover the bills and keep the electricity on and service the customer.
Well, you know, some of the CEOs that I have trained, I come to that revelation too, is nothing's going to work the first six times. So you break off a portion of, you know, the trusted people to go out and test it.
Yeah.
Knowing full well they're going to come back going, you know, I don't know if it's going to work exactly that way, but you know what? We learned six new things that we can apply.
Mm-hmm.
And then that company applies those six new things. And oh my gosh, they moved the needle past the 10% point to 20. And then they're like, well, we could do that a little more often. We could get to double down in a year. And risk adversity is a killer to a business.
Yeah.
Killer.
God, I could talk to you forever about this stuff. I'm really enjoying this. And the book, you wrote it a few years ago, but you said like behind your wife Did you tell me without your permission, put it on Amazon? Was that what you told me?
So I wrote a book to my children. I have had three kids in 2009. And when I got back, I basically wrote it because Stacy and our last, in bed together before I left for deployment, said, I would like you to write things to the kids in case you don't come back. Mm. So for 6 months, I wrote various experiences that I was having over there, very in the raw form, and ended up being 13 lessons that I wanted them to do in case I didn't come back. But then I came back, and she slyly says, hey, Tom, can you make that kind of readable now? So I went back, and it took me another 9 months to make it in a manuscript form. And in the background, Stacy's negotiating to get it printed, and it ends up on Amazon, and we get it vetted. I'm like, okay, well, let's just get it vetted through the military community. And they came back with a positive on it. And then she puts it on Amazon, and then the rest is history.
That's awesome, man. I love that. Well, good for her. And I'm glad that, what a great kind of an ominous task probably at the time to write this down. I can't imagine.
The ominous task didn't come from sharing the experiences. It came from I had failed out of West Point in English. And it was right. Like asking me to put on a pink tutu. I'm like, oh, honey, God, I can't write. And she said a simple thing to me that I cherish forever. And she said, hey, listen, writers write. So just write. And I'm like, oh, that's simple. I can write. I write 100,000 emails a day. I can write. And that change in conversation internally, I just said, okay, I'll do it. So, and then the book gets produced. But the original title was called Spartan Woman because I wanted my kids to know the value of a woman in a warrior's life. And you never hear about that, except the freaking editors and the publisher decided that it won't sell. And, so it ended up being Unbreakable, a Navy SEAL's way of life. So <Wow. laughs> I like to tell that story because I wish it had stayed at Spartan Woman.
Yeah, I like that better too. I like that. Why do they think it wouldn't sell that way?
I don't know anything about the book community. Huh. It's a fun industry. I learned so much in the past 3 years. Woo, man. Crazy.
Well, yeah. How can people get in touch with you? How can they find you? Obviously, you've turned this into a business where you help organizations, you give keynotes, you do one-on-one coaching, you go into an organization, help them turn around. How can they get in touch with you?
Well, my partners and I started a business called Adamantine Alliance. So how you can reach out to us is through tomshea.com. And we have created a fun pipeline where you take a profile test to figure out your level of balance and your ability to overcome problems. And we have an online guided process through the 13 lessons of the book and do keynotes quite often. And if you're really brave and you really want results, the one-on-one is highly recommended if you're committed. And the book is on Amazon. And now I've been talked into doing podcasts like yours. And that's Unbreakable Podcast with Tom Shea.
I'll have links to all of this. Fans of the show, please go find Tom's stuff. He is the real deal. He is Dose of Leadership tribe material for sure. Tom, you definitely have been a great guest. I look forward to staying in contact with you. You're definitely part of the Dose of Leadership tribe. I'm so glad you came on the show. There's so much more I want to explore with you. Would you come back? Be willing to come back?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. Really would.
All right, man. Again, thanks for coming on the show, and we'll talk again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook. a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.